Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand and Telluride, Colorado, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and other episodes of the show at cinematica.co.nz. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 20 of Cinematica. I'm Dan Slevin, reporting live from Telluride in Colorado. And in the Cinematica studio, by the magic of Skype,
Hello, it's Simon here.
And Kaylee.
We're just very humble here in Petone, mate. It's not the same without you.
Yes, and forgive me because I'm sitting at the keys tonight. I'm the recording engineer, so yeah, we'll see how this goes.
You're doing a fantastic job. I'm here in Telluride for the Telluride Film Festival, which starts in a couple of days. And it is one of the major film festivals of the year around the world. It only lasts for 4 days across Labor Weekend. And it's a weird festival because they don't tell you the program. So I've talked to people since I got here and they've said, do you know what's happening? Do you know who the guests are? No, nobody knows until the day after tomorrow exactly what the screenings will be, who the guests will be, who the honorees. It's all, you have to take it all on faith completely. It's awesome.
Isn't it a bit of a slog to get to as well?
Yeah, you could say that. I left Wellington on Sunday afternoon, so it was Auckland, then 12 hours Auckland, Los Angeles, then I had a bit of a break in LA where I went to watch a movie because, you know, it's what you do, and then 2.5 hours to Denver. Denver is 7.5 hours drive to Telluride, which I did in over 2 days. So last night I was in Gunnison, Colorado, where I watched a movie because that's what you do. So, you know, I've seen a lot of Colorado, and really, you know, there's no better way to see the States than to drive, I reckon. It's been a fantastic experience so far.
Very good. Very good. And you must be getting a sense of what's going to be on with all the, you should see a few of the stars jetting and having coffee on the sidewalk, just hanging out.
Well, that's the idea tomorrow. Tomorrow's the plan is to wander down from where I'm staying, which is Mountain Village, which is up in the hills above Telluride, and you take a gondola down from where I'm staying down into the village. And Telluride Village itself, I may be exaggerating a little bit, but it's basically the size of Picton, and it's nestled right at the bottom of a canyon, a very steep-sided canyon. And it's in the wintertime, it's a ski resort, and so it's really built around skiing, snowboarding, that sort of stuff. And what they've done is in this off months, they've just produced a whole lot of events. There's a jazz festival, a flower festival, but the film festival is the number one event of the, I guess, the summer. It's the end of the US summer at the moment, and it's been going for, this is the 39th, which will start in a couple of weeks. And yeah, so I got here quite late today and just in time to watch the sun go down. So unfortunately, I haven't seen any stars, but I did have dinner next to a woman from the board of the San Francisco Film Festival and had a good old chat with her and told her all about Cinematica. So, you know, the word is getting out.
Keep up the good work, Dan.
Today's episode of the show, Richard Linklater reunites with Matthew McConaughey and Jack Black in Bernie. Sly Stallone reunites with Jason Statham and Dolph Lundgren in The Expendables 2. And Wes Anderson reunites with Bill Murray in Moonrise Kingdom. But first, let's have a look at what's in the mailbag. Kaylee.
Yes, your bees keep cutting out.
Yeah. Maybe I'm a little bit too close to my microphone. I'll sit back a little.
Yeah, it's the bees, and then your cutter comes in and you fade out. So anyway, okay. Oh, the excitement of time travel.
It's a 10:15 at night here. It's nearly bedtime.
Yes. So starting out with the news today is a big shout out. One of our listeners, Doug Dilliman, he's a new Auckland cinephile blog aiming to be a one-stop shop for Auckland movie fans. We'll put a link to that in the show notes, but you can find it at aucklandcinephile.blogspot.co.nz. He tweets as at Dillamonster, and he needs encouragement. As we all know, he's struggling away. Trying to get our name out there. So go and, give him some love.
It's a fantastic effort. And every week he'll preview what is going to open this week. weekend, and he's also going to provide a weekly page of links to interesting things to read and listen to, including us.
Very good.
Excellent.
Next, what have you all been watching? New Zealand's Top 5, is it still as quiet as it has been over the last few weeks?
Well, it's interesting. There's some moving and shaking this week. In number 5 is Step Up 4, Miami Heat, or Step Up 4 Revolution, if you are where Dan is. Number 4, coming down from 2, is The Dark Knight. Opening at number 3, Hope Springs. Number 2, The Bourne Legacy. And number 1, Total Recall.
Which just goes to show that advertising on the back of a bus definitely still works in terms of getting people along to your opening weekend. No Bollywood in there this time. That means that things must have picked up.
Yeah, order is being slowly restored.
What kind of bird are you?
I'm a sparrow. She's a dove.
No, I said, what kind of bird are you?
Dear Susie, here's my plan.
Dear Sam, my answer is yes.
Dear Susie, 1.
Dear Sam, where?
Dear Susie, walk 400 yards due north from your house to the dirt path which has not got any name on it. Turn right and follow to the end. I will meet you in the meadow.
Who's missing? Shukuski, you in there? Jiminy Cricket, he flew the coop.
That's a little bit of Moonrise Kingdom, which only got one screening at the Wellington branch of the New Zealand International Film Festival. So I don't think many people will have had a chance to see it yet. Simon, you have seen it. Did you see it at that festival screening or another?
I was lucky enough to see it a wee while before that. Yeah, it was a wee while ago now. So it always seems to be a trend for me, doesn't it? I seem to see these films, you know, a month or two beforehand, and then I've got to dig them up. Relive them.
I'm going to be able to tell that story soon.
Yes, that's right. You will too. It'll be a mind tester for you. There you go. But hey, look, Wes Anderson, you know, he has his very distinctive style, which I think there's an audience out there that really, you know, gets a lot of satisfaction from his types of films. And then equally, I guess, there's a crowd out there that sort of just don't quite work for them. And sometimes he hits it, you know, on the money, so to speak, and sometimes, in my view anyway, like, he kind of just doesn't quite get it. And I mean, like, I think of films like Rushmore, where it was great, and Life Aquatic, I thought, was, you know, the quirky sort of charm that it had was, you know, a really good film. Possibly missed the mark a little bit with Darjeeling, but then came back with, you know, The Fantastic Mr. Fox, and again, sort of his distinctive quirky style, I think, sort of works, you know, very well at times. So here we have Moonrise Kingdom, and I have to say that, you know, like, it's from the perspective of these children who are kind of social outcasts, and they they're one's an orphan who's with a scout troop, the young boy, and then there's the young woman who is kind of living in a life of, well, she's in this family which is dysfunctional, and she's got three brothers. She's the only girl in the family, and they're sort of both portrayed as these loner type outcasts, and they decide to run away and go off on an adventure. A kind of almost it reminds me of when you're a little kid and you have a fight with your parents, and you pack your backpack and you get your tent and you storm off into the great unknown, and it's quite an adventure, and it has that feel to it to a certain extent. The film sort of trucks on from there, where all these other characters come into play trying to find them and resolve this crisis. And I have to say that I found it, you know, a really good watch. I thought it was a lot of fun. It was quirky in places, but he didn't kind of overdo it. And I think the young actors in the film did a really good job of kind of letting us in, even though, you know, these films often kind of have the sense of being too cool for school, you know, that they're just a bit too cool, and it's really a certain crowd that just gets them. But I think with this one, it has a broad appeal, and I think it's a great success. I really enjoyed all the actors. I thought it was nice to see Bruce Willis in a kind of softer role. Bill Murray was Bill Murray.
He was Bruce a wee bit at the end, though, doesn't he?
Pardon me?
gets a little bit of action hero stuff at the end, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. But it's a nice role for him, I think. And I mean, all of the adult actors in this film have some great parts. You know, with Bill Murray and Frances McDormand playing the sort of dysfunctional husband and wife who've got some secrets to hide, and Tilda Swinton comes in and does this great little part, sort of playing the social services person who is very scary, very sort of like war. I think about the old schools of the 1920s or
matriarch.
The matriarch. Yeah, she just, you know, hits it out of the park. And so there's a lot of really good acting in this film. And so I think it really works a treat. How about you, Kelly? What did you think?
I actually, unfortunately, I missed it last night. Ah! I fell asleep and forgot to go.
That's right. Well,
yeah. Oh, I've let down Cinematica with my terrible sleeping habits.
No, that's quite all right.
But I'm definitely looking forward to it. I do like Wes Anderson's aesthetic, although, it's encouraging seeing that it's kind of a return to form and it's more of a film for everyone, because I felt that Darjeeling Limited was a bit too cool for school. I didn't really enjoy it like his other ones. So I am looking forward to this. I'll have to see it with a regular audience and report back.
I think that there's something about the films that he makes for grown-ups being, less accessible than a film like this, which is really about, Fantastic Mr. Fox was made for kids, and this is a film that is about kids. And I think that those, and actually Rushmore was about a teenager as well. So I get the feeling that his films are more accessible when those themes are what he chooses to pursue. I really liked Ed Norton as well. It was nice to see him back in some, and again in another quite gentle role. Everybody's very gentle in the film, aren't they?
They are, but it's a very the thing I like about his films is that they're usually quite personal. They're usually not massive subjects, but they're big subjects in the world that they're in. And I really like the sort of personal, characters in there. They're very intimate, and I think he has a really interesting style from that point of view, that he's always kind of looking at these sort of loners and how they kind of interact, how these outsiders kind of get by. And they're always good, interesting films. It's just that sometimes he doesn't quite hit it out of the park, or get it right in some ways. But I think as a filmmaker, his films, are very worthy and worth attention.
I was going to ask you what you thought it was about, and I think you've helped me out there just by that it's about being different and how it's okay to be different, and you've just got to find people that will accept you rather than trying to make yourself into something that you're not. And I think you're right that's true of what Anderson's films have been about since the beginning.
It's funny because in a way the kids are, and it's in certain parts of the film, the kids are more adult than the adults. I mean, there's a scene there with the young man, he's smoking a pipe, looking very kind of formal. It's really interesting how it kind of ebbs and flows. At one point you think it is going to be about the adults, but then it swings the other way and it's about the kids. And the kids really carry it off. I really enjoyed it. And I will probably watch it again.
I think that's a fair comment too. He's got a very interesting look about his films, doesn't he? If you think about the Life Aquatic, where there were those shots, sort of tracking shots across the front of the submarine, where it was like cutaway and you could see people in their in their cabins and in the individual rooms. And he does that again with the houses in Moonrise Kingdom. The opening shot, it's like a doll's house that you're looking into from outside. And I was watching it, I was thinking that is there any filmmaker that needs 3D less than Wes Anderson, because he creates these sort of tableaux that are very flat and very one dimensional. He doesn't use depth very much. He sort of places people inside a single frame. And I was thinking while I was watching it, it's like 1,000 years ago this would be a tapestry, wouldn't it? Somebody would have done this in needlepoint.
That's a good way to describe it. I mean, and the level of detail in those sets when you've got those opening scenes, like when you've got the house and it is like that doll's house and it tracks all through it. I mean, it's incredible, actually. I mean, it's a lovely way to open the film. And there's lots of things like that in there which really kind of grab you, I think. And that's what I mean. Like he is, relative. He's quite unique.
Yeah, I know, and wonderful for it. And just something else I thought I'd add is that it was shot on Super 16 or 16 mil. So when you see it on screen, there's a lot of film grain in it. It's got a even though the colors are very enhanced, it's whether they're enhanced digitally or not after the fact, but it looks like film even when you see a DCP version of it, and for me that's a sign that, you know, even if we're going to watch films projected digitally, we don't have to lose the film look anymore. You know, they can still capture on film, they can actually add that stuff digitally now as well, but it's a very beautiful looking film.
It is. And do you think it's almost like I don't know, like the films of the late 50s early 60s and maybe coming out of Europe, that's got that kind of washed sunny look. I don't know, I can't quite describe how he does it, but it's a retro, you know, it's a nostalgic look at film in a way, the way that he presents it.
To me the nostalgia is even further. It's more like to the 30s and those films and the first coming out and using sets and color and painting over and that you know, yeah, using kind of that two-dimensional space almost, but you're very aware that you're watching a film and it's something that's set up and it's done so meticulously that it's such a joy to watch because you can see how much work has been put into it and he always pulls it off. So, yeah.
It reminded me of a Godard film that I saw at the Film Society a long time ago called Pierrot Le Fou. And I think a lot of the cutting and the zooms, that it felt like an homage, shall we say, to that sort of the French New Wave, but not the sort of fast, cutty Godard of Breathless, but the playing with zooms and color and sort of wackiness, which Pierrot Le Fou had. Simon, do you have two words for us?
Yes, well, you know, it's pretty kind of lame, I guess, but I just, you know, like quirky Anderson.
That's great. my two, I'm going to steal from Toby Manhire, who sent us these two words when the film screened at the film festival, and that was pistachio romance.
Nice. Yeah, you're getting inside help, man. Like, this isn't, come on. Come on.
You're cheating. Just one thing I would add is that I saw this at the ArcLight Cinema in Los Angeles Sunday afternoon.
It's a distant relative to us, isn't it? ArcLight.
Yeah. How was the ArcLight? I didn't get a chance to go when I was in LA last year.
It's flash, is what I would say. This is a 16 cinema multiplex, but with an art house angle on it. They were playing The Expendables, but a lot of what they were playing was the sort of softer art house that someone like The Lighthouse would specialize in New Zealand. The most interesting thing that I found about it was that they say that they are a disturbance-free cinema, and that means that they won't sell tickets for a session after 5 minutes after it started. And they won't seat you after the feature has started.
Fabulous.
Which is pretty cool, I reckon. And, you know, that's – and, of course, that's a bold sort of statement of intent on their part. It didn't actually stop people talking all the way through the film.
No. And did they have anything up for that?
Yeah. And there was no usher there to stop people. And I felt like as a bit of an outsider, it wasn't really my place to go shushing people.
Well, you'd just be a foreigner. You can't do that.
But I didn't see anybody texting. That was good.
No texting. Oh, that's a start.
And it actually got a round of applause as well at the end. Oh, you know, wow. This is a Sunday afternoon screening. This film's been out for, I don't know, 2 or 3 months in the States. And it wasn't a festival audience. It wasn't an opening night audience. But they were still so into it and they wanted to show their appreciation. So there are a few things there I think New Zealand audiences might be able to learn from.
And I pronounce you. And a knife.
You and your little psychotic gang of muscles.
Today is payback.
6 pounds of pure plutonium is powerful enough to change the balance of the world. Imagine what 5 tons would do.
You're gonna need more men if you expect to get out of here alive.
I'm back.
Sly and the team back from a very successful run with the first Expendables movie. Nobody, I think, expected it to be as quite successful as it did, and so the green light was lit very, very early on for Expendables 2. It's a lot of fun. This is. Are you familiar, team, with the Expendables 1? Did you get to see that?
Yes, I've had the luck or the joy of watching it. Yes,
I'm aware of it, but I have avoided it.
It's very look. I didn't mind it. It's a bit of ham and fun, and they roll it out, and good, you know, good on them.
Like, I feel maybe if I was an aging male that I would enjoy it.
Yeah.
But as a younger female audience, it's not really.
Kaylee, I've got to cling to the hope. You know, and these films, watching these old guys, is it fair to say geriatrics, Dan? Like these old fellas on the screen, you know, pumping up and shooting up. It's great.
Pretty much, and it gives us old guys a little bit of hope, actually, Kaylee, that you can still cut it at whatever age these guys are. And you know, I think they're into their 60s now, aren't they, Sly and Arnie? Jason Statham, of course, is still in his as a character called Lee Christmas, doing his Jason Statham-y stuff as Sly's sidekick. Basically, what we've got here is a bunch of mercenaries. They're the guys that you send in to do a job when you don't want anyone to know that you're paying them, and you don't, you know, they are expendable. They're highly trained. They're very well resourced. They have a bit of a death wish in lots of ways, and they're constantly wisecracking their way through their adventures. When we meet them, these guys, they're rescuing a Chinese billionaire from a hostage situation, but it turns out that they're also rescuing somebody else whose head is sort of under a sack, and you think, well, who's this guy? And it turns out it's Arnie. They're having to rescue Arnie. And
it's not Bane, unfortunately.
I did quite.
Oh, sorry. It's not Bane that's under the bag.
Not Bane this time. He's a little bit embarrassed at having to be rescued by Sylvester Stallone. Obviously, they get back to home base. Bruce Willis gives them a job to do. They've got to go and rescue the contents of a safe in Albania or somewhere. Of course, the whole job goes wrong. And they
has Arnie joined the team in the process?
No, he hasn't. But you get the feeling that he hasn't disappeared from the scene entirely.
Right,
he's lurking.
He's lurking, as are a few other surprise guests who show up a little bit later on. And the audience that I was watching got a big round of applause when they turned up as well. I won't give the game away too much. But the villain of the piece, the supervillain who's also after the contents of the safe, which the contents of the safe is basically a computerized map to where a whole lot of plutonium is from the left over from the Cold War, so that he can sell it to terrorists. But it's Jean-Claude Van Damme, ladies and gentlemen. And
this keeps getting more and more and more convoluted as you introduce more aging celebrities.
God damn, it's Van Damme. Look at that. I mean, I want to know, though, is Mr. T in it? Because he should be.
Well, I'm not sure whether he should be, because he was never really a movie star, was
he? He's an action man, though. Action. And really what you're talking about here is the A-Team, aren't you? You're talking about a kind of spin of the A-Team.
Oh, completely. And then there's a whole section of the film where basically they're remaking The Magnificent Seven as well. So, you know, there's not as if there's anything terribly original about the story. What is nice is that these guys play off their characters. They play off their personas. There's lots of knowing nods to their old catchphrases. At one point, Arnie's having a bit of verbal jousting with Bruce Willis and says, you know, yippee-ki-yay. And so there's a lot of that going on. And, you know, it's fun. It is pure entertainment. And if you're of the generation that remembers these guys in their prime, you'll love it, because it's just an acknowledgement that action movies have got stupid. They're not fun anymore. They're hard to watch. They give you headaches. If you think about the Transformers movies and what have you, and all that Michael Bay stuff, this is what action movies have come to. Even a big hit from earlier on this year, like The Avengers, you know, it wasn't – you know, if you're nostalgic for the great 80s heroes of the past, then this is absolutely up your alley. And to be honest, I love the fact that they were taking the piss out of each other and themselves, and I love the fact that it didn't go on too long. It was really tight and pretty funny, and the action's kind of mad and. Yeah, no, it's terrific. Interestingly, the first Expendables film was directed by Sly himself. This one isn't. This one's directed by an Englishman called Simon West, who made Con Air. And so it's actually a better made film than the first Expendables. It's actually got, you know, it's actually quite a good looking wee film at times. There's some quite good, it's well shot.
Mm.
Very good.
Do you have two words for it, Dan?
My two words for it are, I was just thinking if there's anything else I wanted to say before I moved on, but no, my two words for it are Botox Squad.
And that's your own quote, isn't it? Well done. Like it.
That up all by myself this time.
Very good.
Well done.
So that's Expendables 2, which, oh, I should tell you where I saw it. I saw it last night in a cinema called The Ruby in Gunnison, Colorado. There was only seven of us on a Monday night at that cinema, but... And this is, you know, in a little town. It's a college town, but not a very big place at all. Somebody has built a performing arts center at the university and fitted it out with full DCP projection equipment. So it looked fantastic. It's a live theater venue, so the rake of the seating isn't quite ideal. It's not full stadium seating. Picture and the sound were just fantastic. So yet another mark to the Americans there. The Ruby Cinema in Gunnison.
Very good.
Next time we're in town, we'll have to go.
Next year you're going to be here by yourself. You know that, don't you?
This trip, I much as I'm enjoying it, I really wish there were more people here to share it with me. I'm trying to take as many photographs as I can and little bits of video and what have you, because I really do miss sharing it with people.
Nice try, Dan, but you'll be here, mate. You'll be here.
It's time for the news.
All right. Yes. So starting off, a little bit of an update to the news we had the other week. John Davies and the Academy Cinema in Auckland have followed through on their promise to listen to audience requests and look outside the mainstream for programming. Bobcat Goldthwait's God Bless America opens this Thursday direct from the Melbourne Film Festival, but not the New Zealand Festival. He's also opening French comedy A Happy Event, which looks to be an exclusive that did play at the French Film Festival earlier this year, but did not get to see it, unfortunately.
So it's quite annoying because that's two of his films that we can't review, and we pride ourselves on being across all of these things. But unfortunately, John, you've left us out of the loop there.
Maybe John could start sending, if he's listening, he could start sending us screeners. There we go. Yeah,
good start.
So yes, Telluride isn't the only major festival taking place this week. Venice opens tomorrow with P.T. Anderson's The Master, which I am so looking forward to. So looking forward to. I cannot wait to see that, which that is the major highlight for Venice. Also screening in Venice is Terrence Malick's To the Wonder, Brian De Palma's Passion, which is a remake of the French thriller Love Crime, starring Noomi Rapace and Rachel McAdams. And in other festival news, the BFI London Film Festival will open on October 10th with Tim Burton's Frankenweenie, which is another one I am so looking forward to. Oh, so much good news. I need to get on a flight.
I just wonder how much this is going to be on your lap, Dan, when you in a day or two. I'd love that. Yeah, The Master, man, that would just be awesome to see.
And one of the things that I was talking to this woman from the San Francisco Film Festival about was that Toronto insists that every screening that they have be a North American premiere. Unfortunately, The Master won't be a North American premiere because it's already screened to critics and it's already screened around the place in those 70 mil screenings. But they tend to turn a blind eye to Telluride, so screenings here they'll often ignore. And because Telluride doesn't announce its program, there's really nothing they can do about it anyway. So Telluride can sneak in early with a few screenings that. So there's quite a lot of stuff that's going to be happening in Toronto, maybe and Venice that we're looking forward to here. But it's all top secret.
Mm.
Yeah, and be sure to start tweeting as soon as you find out what you're going to be watching.
Don't start me on how hard it has been to try and get internet access on my phone in this country would definitely brownie points being lost to the United States of America for how difficult it is to do this. I finally got a SIM card from T-Mobile, which apparently is super slow, but at least they would sell me one. And it turns out that it works fine up here on the top of the hill in Mountain Village, but doesn't work down in Texas. I'll be searching for free Wi-Fi as the festival goes on, but I will be letting people know. Believe you me, I can't keep my mouth shut. You know that.
And speaking of the United States, President Obama has great movie taste. He recommended Beasts of the Southern Wild to Oprah Winfrey while she was interviewing him recently. I will have the link to the story in the show notes.
Yeah, I'm not on the same page as Obama.
No?
Yeah. He might be the president of the free world. But
yeah, because then online yesterday, this photo surfaced of Oprah with the lead star, the little adorable girl. So
yeah, no, it's
Oprah's
nice.
All over that.
Very good photos.
Hush Puppy, that was her name, wasn't it?
Hush Puppy, Hush Puppy. Yes. Character's name, yes.
Yeah.
On the subject of Beasts of the Southern Wild, here in the States with the Hurricane Isaac, I think it is, that's potentially bearing down on Louisiana again. There's been a lot of talk about whether the newly restored levees in New Orleans will hold once again. It's a massive test for all that infrastructure that was rebuilt. So it is very much sort of top of mind at the moment here in the States, the impact of those sort of events.
Mm-hmm.
Can I tell you, I am not fond of cremations. I just don't like the idea of someone spending eternity in something the size of a motel ice bucket.
Somewhere along the way, it was just Bernie. He was her servant.
She was demanding.
You should have been here hours ago.
Condescending.
All I want is for you to be a man for once in your life.
Even conniving.
I know you hate me!
No!
Everybody else!
I don't know how the guy stood it.
A woman like that with a bad heart? He should have just shoved a pillow right over her face.
All right, so that's Bernie, the new Richard Linklater film. Kaylee, you're our East Texas funeral director correspondent.
Yes, assistant funeral director, actually. Thank you. Yes, so Bernie, which played at the New Zealand International Film Festival and is getting a relatively limited release in New Zealand.
Yeah, it's in all the main centres, so it's out there, but it's not.
It is out there.
Yeah.
It opened the other week, but we're trying to squeeze everything in. So we have it this week, so if you haven't seen it yet, listen up. So Bernie stars Jack Black as a portly assistant funeral director who is loved by everyone in the very small town of a very small town of Texas, and ends up befriending a recent widow played by the wonderful Shirley MacLaine, and one day has enough and murders her, and the town sort of turns a blind eye to the murder because she was such a horrible person. And it's based on a true story, so it's really great the way that director Richard Linklater's kind of mashed it up. So he's got, I think some of those interviews are with actual townspeople, or some of them are actors, but he's set it up so you're not really sure. It's sort of like a documentary with reenactments, and I found it so appealing, and I couldn't turn away. I just wanted to know what's happening next. It's just this funny little story, and Jack Black isn't playing the outgoing comedian. He's playing a very kind of quiet and reserved and, you know, a little flamboyant, but this really lovely, lovely character that I haven't seen him do before. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really, really funny. So
he kind of looked a little bit, from what I've seen of it, you know, like he's a little bit creepy. Like he comes across to me as in the trailers and what I've seen of it. It's just there's a creepiness, a creepy look to him. Is that just me, or is it, you know, does it actually filter through in the film? There's just something a bit awkward about him.
I think the combination of the really high pants and the mustache looks a bit creepy, but actually he's just this really sweet guy who's just kind of, you know, you start to question it though, because he's introduced as this genuinely kind of sweet, lovely, naive person, but you know, maybe there is a little bit more going on underneath. We're not really sure. It's never really kind of examined, but yeah, I really enjoyed it. That was funny. Dan, what did you think?
It's pretty sympathetic to Bernie, the character, isn't it? Like, I think it's made with his approval, and I think that any hints that he might have genuinely been wanting to commit that crime for the money, or because they were living a pretty sort of high life, weren't they, the two of them? He was spending her, while she was alive, he was spending her money pretty freely, admittedly giving it away to worthy causes, building chapels and paying for softball teams and all sorts of things. But I think it skirts around the idea that maybe there's a bit more to it than meets the eye. It also, I think, and this is, I think, a genuinely sort of fascinating aspect of the film, is it skirts around the idea that he does a really horrible thing. It's horrible. He shoots her in the back and stuffs her in a freezer and then pretends that nothing's happened.
And Kaylee just thinks it's hilarious.
Well, the way it's presented, it's funny because he's just... I don't even know how to explain it, because everyone else in the town is like, oh no, he didn't do it. He would never do that. And even like to the trial, they're arguing that the people on the jury are just too stupid and too redneck to understand that there's no way Bernie could have done it because he's so adored within the community. And it's just so Texas. I love it.
It is Texas. What's so lovely about it is a wonderful performance there from Matthew McConaughey as the district attorney, who is completely bewildered at the town folk defending him and has to actually move the trial to another county in order to he considers to get a fair trial for Bernie. And he says it usually it's the other way around. Usually you have to somebody. Usually the villain is so hated, or the perpetrator, the accused is what I'm talking of.
Yes,
the accused is so hated within the town they have to move it to somewhere else so that he's tried by people who don't know him. On this case, it's because everybody loves him so much that he can't get a fair trial. I think McConaughey's fantastic. Isn't it been like a golden year for him?
Well, it's interesting that he seems to be some of the films he's picking in the roles. They're quite. You know, quite a change. Well, I don't know. I mean, they feel like a bit of a change to me. Like he's not necessarily the lead. He's in the supporting roles, and he just seems to be picking good films at the moment.
But he still totally steals screen time, even as a secondary character. He's still, you know, gold on stage. So
you look at.
Sorry.
Pretty much the only one you look at when it's his turn.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's interesting that he doesn't actually do more. Bigger films, because he does, to me, have all the skills or the looks or whatever you want to call it, but he's got all the weapons he needs. But maybe it's more about the type of roles he wants to play now.
Made some horrible, horrible choices when it came to commercial success. And if you think about things like Ghosts of Girlfriends Past, and what was the there was one with. About the treasure seeking divers. Look, I'm going to look it up here now.
Yeah, I know the one you mean, and that was just a little silly romp. Yeah, I mean you're right, but I think these were his production company films too, weren't they? Well, I think these were the guys behind them. Maybe he got a little bit burnt. Maybe that's why he's just being a bit more selective.
Yeah, well, either way, whatever the decision making process is, long may it last. Is all I can say. Two words for Bernie.
My two words for Bernie is soft killer.
And my two words for Bernie are ambivalent justice.
Oh, nice.
Nice Mo. That could have been another one.
Yeah.
This is going to be hard for you to believe. Whenever you think you remember, it's not real. This person you think you are now, it's all a lie. I'm not me. And who the hell am I?
Get in. I've been looking for you everywhere.
This is my wife.
You're married?
I think it's safe to say we're separated.
Here, you join.
That's Colin Farrell. Doing his best Arnie Schwarzenegger in Total Recall, the number one hit at the box office in New Zealand at the moment. And does anybody else want to put their hand up and say that they've seen it?
No, I gave this one a pass. I really don't like Colin Farrell. Like, that's probably one of the only actors I actively dislike.
Really? No, I love him. In Bruges, I thought he was just fantastic. No, I like Colin Farrell, but I must admit, he I didn't like him in things like SWAT and all those sorts of films. I mean, they're a bit kind of... He even did that Miami Vice, didn't he? I mean, that was... Mm. No, you just don't go there.
And but, I also haven't seen the original, so I feel I would be doing a disjustice.
I loved the original. I thought, you know, I loved that sci-fi and Arnie in it and the whole... I remember, you know, it was one of those films, if you're sitting there at TV, you know, at night time, and it just kind of comes on, and you go, oh, yeah, okay. You know, I'll watch this. Yeah, I'll watch this, you know. So, but anyway, so Dan... Does it live up to its predecessor?
That's a chance to talk. So, Kaylee, is Colin Farrell your Gerard Butler?
Yeah, I just don't like him. Like, he's just kind of gross.
Yeah, I think we've all got blind spots.
What's wrong with Gerard Butler?
Don't get me started.
What's that cracker film that he made with the gangster film in England? I forgot what it's called. It was great. You know, the Russians were chasing after him. Was it rock? It wasn't rock and roll, was it? No, it was something else. It was he was great. Oh, I like Gerald Butler. He's made some poor choices, but he's good. He's good.
Anyway, Total Recall.
The conversation we have when we don't really want to talk about the film at issue. Total Recall. It is a remake of the 1990 smash hit that was made by Paul Verhoeven and Arnold Schwarzenegger, of course. And I know there's been a lot of debate online about is it a better film? Why would you remake a film and make it basically so close to the original? Why wouldn't you change it up a little bit? And the point that I would make is that this film has not been made for people who have seen the original. They don't care that there is an original. They know that kids today are not going to go to the $1 section of the video shop to go and get an Arnold Schwarzenegger film out. So the chances that they will have seen it are negligible. So as far as they're concerned, they've got a clean slate to start again, and that's what they're doing. So it really, the comparing is a kind of pointless exercise. It's a bit like Jane Eyre, you know, every generation's got to have their own Jane Eyre or their own Wuthering Heights, and every generation is now going to get its own Total Recall, and as we know, in a couple of weeks' time, they're going to get their own Judge Dredd, and they're going to get their own RoboCop next year. So it's actually, the comparisons are kind of pointless, and because story-wise, it's exactly the same. The only difference is that the rebellion isn't on Mars, it's in Australia. So, you know, you can take that how you will. What's the film about? Colin Farrell plays an ordinary working stiff who is having some weird dreams. He goes to the factory every day. He's wanting a promotion. It's not getting one. It's all a bit miserable. And then for a bit of a change of pace, a bit of a holiday, he goes to a company called Recall, who will flood him with fake memories. That's the idea, is that you can, for a while, believe that you were a secret agent or a knight of the round table or whatever. Just as he's undergoing this procedure, the SWAT team bursts in, and he realizes that something is afoot, that maybe actually his memories have been stolen from him before, and he is really a secret agent, a double agent, somebody working for the resistance in an effort to overthrow the mean, tyrannical Bryan Cranston from Breaking Bad. So I leave a little breath there for Kaylee to jump in. Did you want to say something, Kayle?
No, you can't see. I'm just waving my hands wildly, like, oh my gosh, this sounds amazing. I think I'd rather watch the 80s version. I prefer 1980s sci-fi. They're pretty hilarious. But this is based on a Philip K. Dick novel, like a...
And like Blade Runner, it's not as interesting a version of the story as the story has potential to be. You know, lots of people who love Philip K. Dick feel like the Blade Runner even, you know, didn't even get close to how interesting those stories could be. The biggest problem I have with this version of Total Recall is that it's got no sense of humor, whereas Arnie's version was sort of campy fun.
Yeah.
It knew that it was ridiculous, whereas this takes itself awfully seriously. And Colin Farrell, you know, we know how funny he can be if he's given the right material, you know, and yet this is all extremely po-faced. It's directed by a guy called Len Wiseman, probably best known for the Underworld films, and there's a lot of fake lens flare in it, or digital lens flare. It's, you know, it's a really boring film to look at, and his favorite actress, Kate Beckinsale, is in it, and it seems to me that a lot of this film is just an excuse to watch her running away in tight trousers.
Right. It doesn't have the... Because the original had a kind of... And it's interesting with Verhoeven's films, they tend to have this political undercurrent, you know, like of say, big business, you know, running places or, you know, state control and those sorts of things. And it, you know, like in the original, that was a big thing. It was about, you know, the private sector sort of controlling all the resource and making life miserable for people, and the big secret, you know, you want to get the big secret out. Does it kind of tap into that side of things or not?
Not in the slightest. It's got no layers to it whatsoever. No depth. Nothing to peel away to find any sort of interesting core. I mean, Verhoeven is actually really a really interesting director. You know, if you think about Mars.
There was Total Recall. There was the robot things, you know, the where he played the police, the robot policeman, what were they called? Robocop, you know, and stuff like that. I mean, he did those two films, didn't he? Didn't he do the Sharon Stone film as well, which...
Basic Instinct.
Yeah, he did that as well, didn't he, I think.
But the one I was thinking of was Starship Troopers.
Yeah, which, but it's A Bug's Life.
Exactly, which was basically about, you know, just fascism, but just revealing the inconsistencies behind, you know, that sort of authoritarianism. And, you know, he is a very interesting director, and it's a bit of a shame that it's been a long time since he's actually got to make a film of his own.
He kind of pulls them off in a clever way. I mean, they're very mainstream, very action-y, but and yet there's this kind of undercurrent, you know, this kind of political kind of undercurrent flowing through the film, which I really like. I like those about his films. There's something just a little bit chaotic about them.
Yeah, and this isn't remotely chaotic. It's got no sense of humor. It's got no depth. It's got a few big sort of action set pieces, but there's at no point do you care about the characters or what's at stake. Or, you know, I just felt completely disengaged through the entire process and found myself sort of looking at the speakers on the wall of the cinema and wondering where they were made. Things like that, you know. But occasionally a loud noise would drag me back to the screen. But I really couldn't care less whether Colin Farrell, you know, stayed with Kate Beckinsale or left her or whatever. Just blah, totally. I suppose you want two words now, don't you?
Go on.
Yes, indeed.
Well, my two words for Total Recall are wait, what? Which is pretty much what. What happened to me quite a lot as the next plot twist was revealed. Don't waste your time with Total Recall. There's got to be better bang for your buck. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is our show for this week. An interesting experiment, I'm sure you will agree, from like a transcontinental cinematica.
It is.
You need to send us some photos, because for all I know, you could actually be just down the road in a telephone box right now. So we need hard proof, Dan.
We'll send some photos through, maybe we could stick them on the Cinematica site, or I'll put them on my site and you can link to them, because I'm writing a diary through I'm away for 35 days. So after Telluride, it's New York for a week, where I've already set up some to go and see some screenings there. We'll be reporting about what it's like to go to the movies in New York as well. So, I will be making sure that there's plenty of evidence to prove that I actually did this.
Perhaps an interview with the taxi driver in New York. Thanks. Mm. Yeah. Whatever.
Well, next week I will still be here in Telluride, but the festival will be over. It only lasts 4 days across Labor Weekend here in the United States. I'll be sharing my highlights of the festival with you, and maybe anything else, any other interviews that I've managed to score while I'm here. Plus, we'll be reviewing Maggie Gyllenhaal and Hugh Dancy in Hysteria, and the German period piece movie set during World War II, Wunderkinder, which opens next week in selected cinemas around the country. All that and as much as we can squeeze in next week's exciting episode of New Zealand's favourite podcast, Cinematica. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to click subscribe in iTunes or your own favourite podcasting software, so the latest episode is always downloaded automatically. Please leave us feedback at the iTunes store, ratings, reviews, they're all super useful to help more people discover the show. And Kaylee, you can let people know how to contact us and give us their feedback in real time.
Yes, you can can find us on Twitter with our Twitter handle at CinematicaCast, on Facebook at facebook.com/CinematicaPodcast, on our website at cinematica.co.nz. And if you feel like you want to send us an email or a long review, you can email us at cinematica@gmail.com.
The show is a Guns of Steel production. The theme music is 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke, and you can buy that at the iTunes store. We're going to leave you with some more music from Moonrise Kingdom this time. This is Françoise Hardy and Le Temps de l'Amour. Until next week, it's good night from me.
Good night from me.
And good night from me. On s'en souvient.